just get your levels, and then we can ask questions. Have you potted before?
What?
No. Have you potted? You haven't.
I've never been able to use it as a verb officially.
This is your first podcast.
This is my very first podcast.
Oh my God. Welcome.
Oh God, I'm so nervous. Oh God, have I fucked it up already?
Don't be nervous. Hello everyone. Welcome back to the Criterionaut podcast, the podcast where I, Graydon Paul Shepherd, talk about the movies that I think should be in the Criterion collection, but aren't, and some that shouldn't be, but I love. And today I'm with my dear, dear acquaintance, one of my closest acquaintances.
Did you find out that I am merely an acquaintance? A little bit heartbreaking, but sure, my dear best friend, I call you my best friend, whatever. But no, I'm happy to be one of your dear, dear acquaintances.
You are my best friend.
No, stop. Oh, come on. I forced you to say that.
The voice of Alicia Monique Young.
Oh. Why don't you use my full name? Am I in trouble? Hi.
Hi. My Chinese friend.
That's me.
Which is very important.
Oh my God, we have to clarify this right now. I didn't even think about that.
It's been a thing because I've wanted to do the movie we're talking about today, which is Crazy Middle Class Asians. crazy medium rich in San Francisco Asians for a long time. But I was always like, in today's woke culture, is it bad if I did it with another non-Chinese person? Is it bad if I ask a Chinese person to do it?
Which way Canadian, to do this?
Which way to do it? And then it's just, whatever, it's a movie, it's amazing.
It's an amazing movie.
Yeah.
But who of your Asian friends can you ask that won't consider it racist for you to ask them?
Yeah, exactly.
And me! It was you. Which I'm so
Director
happy.
Of Kim's Convenience.
I'm so happy that this is the one.
Good. Please. Here, hold your mic. Like,
am I closer?
A little bit. Yeah.
How about now?
See, you're on the bottom now.
Oh, that's the red. That one's me. Okay.
That's too loud.
Okay, too loud.
But I can always adjust.
Okay, what about there we go.
Tell everyone, tell the naughties who you are, what you do. We're going tonight to see a screening of your new show that's coming out on Crave.
Yes.
Called New Eden.
You already said my name, so we know that. Mm-hmm. I am a director, mostly in TV, comedy, mostly. And I just did a show called New Eden, which is starting in January 1st on Crave.
Is Crave available in the States?
I don't think so.
Not yet.
I don't think
so.
Will
it be streaming in around the world or just in Canada?
I think it'll just be in Canada to start. I'm not sure what's happening with it in the States. I feel like if it doesn't go into the States, then the Americans are making a huge mistake.
Yeah.
But yeah, if not on January 1st at some point or illegally, please help yourself. Shouldn't say that. It's a show. It's like a mock doc. What is it? It's a
mockumentary.
I hate that word, but it's a mockumentary. It's a true crime mockumentary.
Okay.
Set in the 90s. So it's a documentary made in 1991 about a cult that started in 1977, the first all-female cult. Mm-hmm. And it's starring these two phenomenal women, Kayla Lorette and Ebony Rosen. They're great, like, improvisers and comedians about town. And they wrote it, and they are starring in it. And it's very funny, very complex, very, like, it's basically, yeah, everything you want from a true crime story.
But, and is everybody going to be there at the TIFF Bell Lightbox
Everyone
tonight?
Will be there tonight at the TIFF Bell Lightbox.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Fun.
Yeah.
And we are in the apartment that started it all. We filmed, Alicia was,
oh my God,
was
yes.
the assistant director, wardrobe stylist, location manager, everything on Shit Girls Day.
Yeah.
And we are in the apartment where much of it happened.
That piece of history was made.
I know.
Right here on this couch.
Yeah.
Well, you wanted more chips.
I wanted more chips. I was eating more chips. Yeah. Walking down the hall and saying I slept
real
good. I can't
believe we shot anything in this tiny, tiny apartment.
Yeah.
And
yeah.
I can't believe I'm still here.
This is the best apartment. I love this
apartment.
It
all started here and it all ends here.
Yes.
And now 10 years later, we're still here.
Oh my God.
Oh my God.
10 years.
Oh my God.
The years are whipping by.
Yes. Yeah, that's so crazy.
Yeah.
And that job, I mean, that was so much fun. That was like
so
back
fun.
In the day where we were just like young and scrappy and had a bunch of great ideas and just did them.
Yeah. And now we're worn down.
And now we're like embittered and sad and still in that same spot.
Yes, exactly.
Full circle.
It's wildly...
We've come a long way.
Yeah. So you watched it this morning.
I watched it this morning. You're catching me like fully puffy-eyed, just like literally probably half an hour ago, having just watched it.
Yeah.
And having not watched it since watching it in like whatever the... early 90s when I saw it.
93 was when it came out.
Yeah, at the Ridge Cinema in Vancouver.
Oh my God,
I think I went by myself.
Oh my
and
God.
And I bawled my eyes out. I remember coming out just fucking sobbing. And lo and behold, here we are this morning, the same thing.
Yeah.
I mean, it's... Of course, I have no connection to any of those stories whatsoever except being Asian and having a mom.
Mm-hmm.
But... it's so hard not to get caught up in that. I mean, no, I can absolutely connect to all of them in so many ways. But
If you haven't seen it, the baseline plot is that it's about these four women who emigrated from China to San Francisco and their daughters. And one of the... So, you know, this is going to be a spoilery, of course, because I don't care if you've seen it or not. Mm-hmm. But if you haven't seen it,
based
really,
on the spoiler,
really
you're
going to
want to see this. Yeah.
Yes. And so one of the aunties, the four women who are the elder generation, has died. And her daughter finds out that she has two twin sisters who are still alive in China. And she's going to go back.
Oh, you're really spoiling it right up front.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. It's all out there. And then... So then we just kind of cycle through all of the aunties' stories of their lives in China and then the four daughters' lives in America and how wildly different they are, but similar. And
they're all connected. These four women are connected because they're part of the same, like they've been playing mahjong together for years and then their daughters all know each other through this connection. Not that that really plays that much, but it's like, it's also just like an old generation. It's like a story told through three generations of stories, you know, from the American perspective to the new immigrant perspective to the like old world perspective.
And
it's amazing. It's, you know, and I was thinking about this movie. I remember thinking about this movie when like Crazy Rich Asians came out and they were like, you know, this is the first great, you know, full like Asian cast, like American blockbuster. And I was like, Joy Luck Club? I just kept thinking, Joy Luck Club?
I remember Joy Luck Club? Thought the same thing when I was watching last night. I was like, yeah, this was full Asian, like completely Asian cast.
I mean, I don't know what the numbers were, America, but I feel like it did very well. Like people saw it.
I think it was... the budget was around $11 million, and it made budget was $11 million, and it grossed $33 million worldwide.
Mm.
So, yeah, I mean that's a success. And I thought that I have all the names written down. It's hard because there are so many characters at so many different times in their lives. So there's like the four mothers, the four daughters. And then the four mothers are played by younger, different actresses. And then the four daughters are played by younger, different actresses.
And also because they all look the same. Oh, just had to dig it in right off the top. It's hard to track them, but...
A little bit. Or hard to remember everybody's...
Names
a little bit. Because there's Auntie Ying Ying, Aunt May, Su Yuan, who died, and... Lindo.
I really Auntie just remember Westerly because it's such an amazing name.
Waverly.
Waverly, goddammit. You don't remember. Waverly, I remember none of them.
Waverly. So the younger, when the woman who drowns her baby, baby killer, Auntie Ying Ying, and got away with it. Hello.
I know. And like, guilty because she has no consequence for killing her baby.
Yeah. She kills her baby because her husband's a jerk and she wants to take away
the one thing that's precious to him.
I thought he looked like the guy from Crazy Rich Asians a little bit.
Yes, totally.
Kind of that like dapper.
Yeah, that handsome kind of. Yeah.
Yeah. But watching it this time, I had a little less sympathy for her.
Yeah.
I get it, but it's also like you really...
Time or something. It's like it's also watching that story now. It's a little harder to watch, but maybe it's also they don't spend a lot of time there. I mean, I think also in terms of like the way that those flashbacks are all done, I mean, it's amazing that you, like, for me at least, like, to connect so emotionally to all of those flashbacks, given, like, really in the grand scheme of things, how brief they are.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Like, that whole baby killing scene. Like, you know, you have, like, maybe, like, three scenes before it.
Yeah.
They're fucking, he's an asshole, baby dies.
Yes. You know? It's very efficient storytelling.
Yeah.
And did you read the book, though?
I didn't read the book.
So, and I watched it with my mom last night, and she had read the book, and she would be like, oh my god, I remember this part, like, right. She read it a long time ago, and she was she remembered the baby drowning, and then she was the story of the woman with the concubines, Lindo, her fourth mother
wife.
Was her father died, and then her mother went to be a concubine for this guy, and it turns out that he had raped her.
Mm-hmm.
And then I always remember the sticky dumplings.
The opium
stuffed. Yeah. She ate a dumpling after dumpling stuffed with the opium. There was also a lot of, because I was doing screen grabs after I went through the movie, and there's a lot of voiceover and a lot of people just staring off.
I know. I was actually thinking, like, by the time, and I don't remember watching, I don't remember it at all. The first time I watched it, I think I just ate it up.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
Sticky dumplings filled with opium. But this time around, I was like, by the third flashback, I was like, this, I can't believe Mad TV or somebody didn't do some kind of parody of this, which is like, suddenly somebody stops talking and then it's a slow push in on somebody's face as VO, like, and then you go in, and then into flashback
and like
a match cut to somebody like touching their burn.
Yes. Oh my god. And it could have been like, why aren't you talking? Like, I just asked you a question. You've been staring at the mahjong set.
I also felt like there's so many of those, like, there's so many shots that felt like they had ADR to fill out the space or something, know? Like, there's so many just, like, clean singles of people who are just staring off into the distance as, like, a whole bunch of ADR is just thrown at them to fill the, like, silence.
Clinking plates and just chatter in the background. Yeah. When did you cry?
Oh, God. Constantly. From the moment you asked me to, if I wanted to do that, the moment I watched the trailer to remind myself of what it was about, to, like, I think it was like within the first scene. I mean, the first big one was, God, now I'm thinking, like, I remember crying at when they're in the hair salon looking at the mirror.
That scene is amazing.
Oh my God.
They never look at each other.
Yeah.
But they are looking at each other. That's such a cool way to handle that.
It's beautifully done.
Just the indirect directness. Like, it's amazing.
I mean, I don't remember other names, but the in the kitchen with the mom who's dead.
Oh, my God.
The flashback to the mom who's dead and the
best gives quality her crab.
The best quality crab.
That's the best line in the whole movie.
Oh, my God.
You're mad at Waverly? How could I be mad at someone with all that style? It's just a shame that I wasn't born that way.
So it's me you're mad at?
No. I'm just sorry that you got stuck with such a loser. That I've always been so disappointing.
What do you mean disappoint? Piano?
Everything. My grades, my job. Not getting married. Everything you expected of me.
Not expect anything. Never expect. Only hope. Only hoping best for you. There's no wrong to hope.
No? Well, it hurts. Because every time you hope for something I couldn't deliver, it hurt. It hurt me, Mommy. And no matter what you hope for, I'll never be more than what I am. And you never see that, what I really am.
June, since your baby time, I wear this next to my heart. Now you wear next to yours. It will help you know. I see you. see you. That bad crab, only you try to take it. Everybody else want best quality. You're thinking different. Waverly took best quality crab. You took worst. Because you have best quality heart.
And it was funny because I was watching it with my mom and her husband. And
I honestly don't think I could have watched it with my mom. I was
holding back a lot. But at that moment, like, because that's my favorite moment in the movie. And then at that moment, like, the dog went. They have a puppy who's like crazy and like went and did something. And then so she got up, and then my stepdad got up. And then I was just like, no, you guys, this is the best part. And it's just like, I was like, I'll just have to let that go.
Right. It was like, I feel like you needed that as like just a buffer though. Cause I was like, again, that happened like an hour ago. And I was like, oh my God, which gives her the jade necklace. I mean, obviously, and also there's like so much stuff in there that is just like inherently being Asian, being Chinese, crab. Like, I have flashbacks to my my grandfather died of the gout because he ate so much of that.
Oh my
crab.
God, his
jeep. And I remember him, like, sitting underneath the table at like a Chinese banquet, you know, with the Lazy Susan, like, and seeing him like sneak the crab back into his lap because my grandmother wouldn't let him eat the tamale or whatever that very rich, disgusting part of the crab.
Like,
that,
gross.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's a delicacy, but looks like snot.
Yeah.
And seeing him sneak it into his lap to eat it. God. And then when he got up, he had this huge oil stain on his lap. And my grandmother was like, did you have an accident? And he said, yes. Because he would rather have been known to shit his pants instead of like being busted for sneaking the crab. Anyways, but like that, the jade necklaces, the tiny little jade bracelets that she like wraps up in the package and leaves with the babies. Oh, and then when she leaves the babies, although part of me was like, why aren't you carrying them? Why do you have to push them in a giant wagon everybody else is like, you know, clutching all their belongings to their bodies?
There's a moment where she is there in the wagon, and I wrote it down. It's at like 2 minutes or 2 hours and 3 minutes. It's like one of the last scenes of her, and they're in the wagon and they're shaking so violently. Like, their eyes are like rolling back in their heads.
I mean, it is hard to like, there's also, you know, obviously like being filmmakers and knowing how movies are made, it's always hard to watch a movie without being like, how'd they do that? And why did they do that? And like, always thinking, it's like, wow, they really found some great fucking twins to just sit in a buggy and be shaken within an inch of their life. And they're just like,
their brains are scrambled. Yeah. Where are they now?
Yeah.
Oh man. I'm trying to remember where I cried. I, of course, best quality crab, but then there's so many. It's like not intentionally manipulative. I don't know if it is. It's soapy. It's not melodramatic because it's like the characters are very developed and real. Mm-hmm. But the there's so much intentional like gut wrenching.
Yes, throughout. I mean it is set out to do exactly what
and
it does.
And relationships too, just like how they all are like dealing, like the. All of them married shitty guys.
They all married shitty guys. They all married, like, half of them marry white actors who go on to play assholes or who have played assholes in every other movie.
Yeah.
Like, Andrew McCarthy just comes out of the blue.
Yep, from St. Elmo's Fire and like, what else?
All the John Hughes movies.
Down. Oh, yeah, of course. Pink, Pretty in Pink.
I mean, he was a classic movie from the 80s who always ended up playing like the white rich guy who either turned out to be like the white rich guy with a heart or the white rich guy who was going to cheat on you, or, you know, I think he really cornered that market.
But then they stayed together.
They stay together.
Because he was the rich guy. What did his family do again?
They were like rich publishers or something.
Right. And his mom was racist.
Yeah.
And then she like lost herself in the relationship.
Yeah.
And then she learned about her grandmother dying.
Right.
Of the opium
Is she the opium one?
It's hard to see.
Should really just have like a photo, map, to be like this one opium. This is how they lived and died, and this is the connection.
But she sits in the rain crying and says that she was
the
one who stuffed the opium in her mouth. Yeah. So that was her grandmother, her mother's Lindo, and then she gets her power back, I guess. Mm-hmm.
But who was your favorite grandmother?
Lindo. Auntie Lindo, yeah. For sure.
Yeah.
She starts it off. She's like the cheeky troublemaker. I always think of Steel Magnolias and Aunt Weezer or whatever
that was. Kind of was the Asian Steel Magnolias. A little,
right? Yeah. I don't know. Like mothers and daughters.
Mothers and daughters, I guess. Yeah.
Death and loss and relationships. And which one would you be out of all of them?
Out of all of
which,
them?
Which grandmother would
you? Which one can I identify with? Probably the baby killer.
Yeah.
Killed a lot of babies.
Sponsored by Planned Parenthood.
I think Lindo was the one that I'm only using her name because now I know it. Mm-hmm. But she, one, I think she was the best cast.
Yes,
like she felt like, you know, the Nai Nai or the Popo from my childhood. She's like the grandmother.
Yeah,
you know, like, but then just for pure glamour, the baby killer. I loved her. She's gonna be known as the baby.
I love that life. Smoking in the attic room, in the Beetlejuice attic room.
Oh my god, the Beetlejuice attic room. Although I will say that she was also probably the worst cast. The older version of herself just felt like
she didn't look
Asian one, which I guess what does that mean? Blah blah blah. But
yeah, I looked it up because I was like, wait, is she? But she, I didn't really do a deep dive, but her speech when she's like, my daughter will hear me calling, even though I say no
with
words.
The blinds against the vertical. Windows.
It's the most 80s thing in the 90s.
Yeah.
It's not too late. All my pains, my regrets, I will gather them together. My daughter will hear me calling, even though I've said no words. She will climb the stairs to find me. She will be scared because at first her eyes will see nothing. She will feel in her heart this place where she hides her fears. She will know. I am waiting like a tiger in the trees. Now ready to leap out and cut her spirit loose.
Yeah.
And that her architect husband, that scene was all good. That was, so that woman played Julie, Ross's girlfriend on Friends, who he meets on his archaeological
date. Well, I did not have the time, and I really wanted to do kind of a dive, and maybe you know this, but all those actresses, we know them all.
Yeah.
Maybe less so the mothers, but the daughters have all been in something, and we know them all, but I can't place what they're... each one of them is from.
Well, June.
But yes, of course.
The main, Julie is Ross. So, what was her name? Lena? No. Yeah, Lena was Julie from Friends. The architect, the woman who had the architect as a husband in the gray house with the cutest cat in the world.
and she's the one who splits everything 50-50.
Yeah.
What a great character husband that is.
Oh my god, he was awful. Conversation over.
And also when they're there's that shot from looking down on them in the living room.
Oh yeah.
And they're sitting, there's a couch behind them, but they're both sitting on these tiny little chairs having that conversation.
Yeah, is that when the vase smashes?
When the vase vase smashes.
So Ming-Na Wen is played June, and she was just recently on an episode of The Mandalorian. Do you watch the Disney Plus Star Wars?
I just saw one episode, random episode, just so that somebody could tell me who Baby Yoda was.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And everything everything I saw, everybody was wearing masks, so I don't know who anybody was.
Yeah, true. But I know it's the guy from Narcos. That's all I know.
Yeah. Actually, the one that I did see was conveniently, coincidentally, directed by Deborah Chow, okay. who was Canadian, Asian, rise to fame, real Canadian Asian success story.
Amazing.
Yeah.
Yeah. What was I going to say? Fuck. Oh, so wait. So did your mom move here? What's your.
I'm like third gen or third generation.
I always get confused about that. It's first generation when you're born, the first.
Yeah, you're the first one born here. So my mom was born here. Okay. I was born here. My grandmother was not born here.
Okay.
So you're second
generation Canadian? Yeah.
So
there's only like five generations of Canadians.
We don't go back that far. No. my grandmother. So that like really it was more it that's like a my grandmother and my mother's story. Like if I were to insinuate myself into that this story in any way, I would
so
be
so you're the girl the baby. On the piano with the crab legs playing with playing keys.
God. I mean, it really does tap into it in some ways taps into every Asian stereotype, but in other ways it like taps into just an Asian truth, which is like, yes, we played piano and we were overachievers and we eat crab and we're jade.
I love that.
True.
I did like that. The one, Waverly's white boyfriend, who she married or she was going to marry, mm-hmm. she brought him over and he oversauced he insulted.
Oh my God. Oh,
that's such a great, like the passive aggressiveness.
Also, where's that guy from?
He's from stuff. I looked it up and I forget. I liked that it's just like, this is. He's the outsider for once, instead of like the Asian person being the outsider in the white world, and just like seeing him being, not knowing anything and looking a fool to all these people, and you're like totally on their side. You're like, I'm an idiot, and you just see their life at it as it is. And yes, stereotypes for sure, I'm sure, but like it felt. I think I was saying to my mom, like, it felt like. God, am I turning into Norman Bates? talk about mummy.
Mummy said. Mummy said this.
But it felt like, you might pass, go through Chinatown in Toronto, and you're like, okay, that woman's got her pearls in her purse, and you just like don't even think about what kind of possibly wild life she had in China, or and just you don't necessarily get to go in Canada. I find Canada like extremely multicultural, but at the same time I lived down Roncesvalles in the Polish neighborhood, and there was no warmth towards me there. Right. And I never got, I would go to the Polish bakeries and they'd be chatting in Polish ahead of me. And then I'd get up to the counter and they'd be like, $2. And you don't get necessarily.
Yeah. You don't get their stories. Inside. You don't get connected. You don't you don't hear what they're, but that like behind all that coldness, they've got a world of pain of dropping their babies off of trees or whatever behind them.
And funny characters in their family, rich lives. Yeah. It was nice to see that represented, I think. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it is true, the kind of whiteness in this movie is treated as outsiders, which is, refreshing.
Yeah.
But also, it's refreshing, but also not really addressed in a way, which I kind of appreciate, but then they just got to be.
Yeah.
But there's no mention of it, which is maybe not a truth. I feel like you bring home a white boy in an Asian family like that, and they're gonna make mention of it.
Yeah.
But I also appreciate that it wasn't outside of the super racist mom, it's not about it's an inherent it's not about the white people,
Yeah.
And it's about the Asian experience within that.
Yeah.
And how they take it on.
Yeah.
I also love that the men are non-existent.
I know. I was like, her dad shows up in the last 4 minutes. I was like, wait, he's alive.
I mean, at the same time, I was like, when the dad shows up in the last 4 minutes, I was like, yeah, of course. They've ignored men the whole time. And then the one guy who's going to tell the most important story is going to be the dad, who doesn't have any character whatsoever. But I also
oh, that was, he was so sweet
though. He's so sweet. And I cried then.
Yeah.
Yeah. But he was, I do love like all the grandfathers and the dads and the boyfriends, and they're just, they're what they should be, which is just plot points rather than full-blown characters.
Yeah. Yeah. Okay, wait. So do you know the director, Wayne Wang?
I
personally.
Yes, well.
Yeah, so Wayne Wang also directed Made in Manhattan.
Amazing. Yeah, I was so curious. I didn't have time to do the Google, but like, yeah, what else did he go on to do?
Yeah, that was the only thing I knew, really. I'm sure there's more that I'm...
I mean, that tracks, I guess. Like,
That's sort of like Ralph Fiennes really... and J-Lo. I can't believe they had any chemistry at all, those two.
Oh my God. I wonder what this movie would have been in the hands of like an Ang Lee, you know?
Yeah.
I was like,
serious. I don't know. Because it was nice.
But you know what? I think it was perfect, you know? Because it is like blatantly like there to tug at your heartstrings.
Yes.
It's not high art by any means, but it's good storytelling.
Well,
it's,
and the score too. Rachel Portman, who has done a ton, but she... one of my other favorites of hers is Cider House Rules, which I listen to all the time. But from the beginning,
the score is what does half the work for you.
Yeah.
Like, that's where I'm like, oh, I'm crying now. I'm supposed to cry now as soon as you hear those.
Yeah. It's very manipulative, but I like it. I love that. What else? Oh, yeah. And then Oliver Stone production, of course, which I was forgot about that.
How did he get involved in
Dangerous Man.
That? I know. Has he been Me Too yet? Me Too?
Oh, God. I don't know. He probably just kills everyone who...
Right. He just has a lot of bodies.
Insane.
Yeah.
There's so much to talk about. I feel like we're
we're bouncing all over the place.
Oh, so some favorite quotes. Oh, my son says he's planted enough seeds in you to fill a basket when she gets married off to that little boy with the mole on his back. There's also like some crazy, not crazy, but some questionable acting. But
it's definitely fine. Definitely. I was also thinking about how little British kids, they just have British accents and it makes them look like Billy Elliot. Like they can act like their little accents make them look like the best actors regardless.
Yeah.
Doesn't translate. If you're speaking Chinese, you can still tell that that is a child actor who can't act at all. But that little shot of him when he sees her naked for the first time and it cuts to him behind the sheets.
You can sleep on the bed now.
I love the little fat kid.
And what about those matchmakers?
Oh, the matchmakers with their like white faces and their red lips. Oh, that was so good. So good.
The movie also reminded me of Raise the Red Lantern.
Mm.
Have you seen that?
Haven't seen it in a very long time.
Which is also not in Criterion Collection. I was surprised to see, because that's about a woman who becomes a concubine as well. And the Raise the Red Lantern means that like the husband would have a red lantern set up outside of the quarters of the woman he was going to sleep with each night. And so she was new at first, and then she like... then another concubine comes and she kind of gets relegated to not being his like hot new wife anymore.
Right.
And then she goes crazy and kills herself, I think.
Right.
Just to spoil that movie for you.
Tune in for that episode.
But the one kind of similar era, I guess this was World War II?
What? I'm shaking my head.
You don't know.
I don't know.
I think it was because she was running away from wartime, and I looked it up. I think it was World War II. Yeah, World War II. Mm-hmm. Which I didn't really know that China was that involved with World War II.
Yeah, that's why I'm like, I'm shaking my head. And I don't know the Chinese glanced experience. At the wiki.
This is why I invited you on. Yes. You're supposed to be the historian.
Well, you know what a war history, war buff I am.
other quotes. Okay, wait. Oh, right. This is my favorite kind of bad acting part, when her mom is parading her around Chinatown with the Life magazine that she's on the cover of, and she says, "If you want to show off, why don't you learn to play chess?"
Why do you have to use me to show off? If you want to show off, then why don't you learn to play chess?
Very long beat.
She's like, is she forgetting her line? Nothing we could cut to there.
Very long beat.
Did like they forget to correct that?
There's a lot of thinking eyes happening.
Yeah. Searching for.
I mean, I will say, like, casting wise, I mean, if I showed you any picture of me under the age of 12, I could have been any of those little girls that they cast. Like, they were all the same at that age.
Yeah.
Though I wanted to play Little Orphan Annie.
Oh my God.
I was then told I was too Asian to play Little Orphan Annie, so fuck them. But still.
Who told you that?
I think my mom did.
Oh, twist. Yeah. That was going to be... You had the critical mom, just like Waverly.
Yeah.
That's so funny. But I mean, come on, Chinese orphan.
I mean, she broke it. Yeah. At the time, they weren't going to do that. Yeah. I'm sure she would have said, you think they're going to go Asian first? I don't think so.
Oh, God.
What was another thing? Like, another weird little, like, thing that spoke to the era, because there is something about that movie that did feel a little timeless, although like all those puffy hairstyles that they had very early 90s.
Yeah.
But there's a moment where she's moisturizing herself with Lubriderm. Remember that? Like it was like a very, I just remember that era being very like a Lubriderm era. It was like a white rectangular
with the pump top.
Yeah. And it was just
a Lubriderm era. That's so funny.
Like before serum.
Pre-Aveeno.
Yeah, pre-Aveeno. We're breaking this down in skin groups.
Yeah.
I think it was maybe that, God, this is awful. I can't remember any of their names, and the point of reference is even worse, but the Andrew McCarthy's wife.
She was very meek.
Yes. She didn't have an identity. She didn't take her own agency. She identified herself through her husband. That was the whole thing.
Rose. That's her name.
Rose. She was the one who was Lubriderming.
Okay.
Yeah. Who were all the so we had the husband who needed everything to be half-half.
Mm-hmm.
There was the Andrew McCarthy. There was... And then
blonde white guy
who put his soy sauce in everything. And then also, okay, so there was a scene where she makes a speech at kind of towards the end, right before she goes to China.
Yeah.
And maybe I was looking at an email or something at the time, but then it cuts to a baby crying.
Whose baby was that? Wait, yeah, she was...
Is that a plot point?
No, it's Waverly's kid. Because remember when Waverly has her mother, Lindo, over, and she's like, I'm living with this guy.
Right.
And she throws the shirt at her and it lands on her head.
Yes. Oh my God.
And she's like, so there's a bunch of kids' toys around. And so it's her kid from her first marriage.
Right.
To the, and I think her first husband was Chinese, and then they got divorced, and then she started dating the white guy.
Right.
Yeah.
So this is her and the white guy's baby.
Yes. And so June is tucking the kid in. And is it Waverly who sees her doing that? Yeah. And then they have a little moment.
Oh, June is tucking her kid in, right? Because she doesn't have kid.
Yeah. Or a man. Poor June.
Oh my God. Poor June. So in a way, I identify with June the most.
I remember. Okay. I almost just skipped over that. I remember when I was younger watching it. I probably watched it right when it came out on VHS. And when she went to China and got off the boat and met her sisters, I was like, they're so old. And now I'm like, oh, that's about my age.
Yeah. I mean, obviously cried there.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Our little sister.
Yeah.
Mm, yeah.
Well, also because my sister's name is Megan. And now I don't know why. It actually took that exact moment to kind of clue in. And I was like, oh, because we would call her May May when she was a kid.
Oh.
And I think that's why my mom named her Megan. Or her Chinese name is Megan or something. And I was like, is it just because it's easy to say in Chinese? Or is it? And then it's like, oh, May May means little sister.
Huh.
So she'll only ever be that.
Oh.
Yeah. I also, that when she gets off the boat and it kind of, you know, that's, you see the sisters for the first time. And, you know, it's such a great device where it's like
her mom.
Looks like her mom.
Yeah.
But I was like, it almost landed lasted for too long.
Too long. I thought that was
like, okay, is this going to be an interesting casting choice? Or because they do it twice, right? They like
several times. I kept thinking like somebody's going to cross and it's going to change, and then it doesn't. It's like there were a lot of opportunities. Yeah. They like to hold on shots in this movie.
But there were a few things where there were a few devices like where it's like, okay, this feels a little like throwing the clothes up and landing on mom's head. Like, I feel like that's the kind of shit you like pitch in a commercial and like eat that shit.
Oh my God.
The tea kettle boiling.
Yes.
Like, really, we're going to lean on that?
Yeah.
Yeah.
As somebody staring off into space, of course.
Just as the moment of tension just builds. Enough about this movie.
No. What other quotes? Let's see.
What things do we need to cover? What are the quotes?
We already talked about my daughter will hear me calling, even though I have said no words. I like being tragic, Ma. I learned it from you. I can't remember who said that, but it was funny.
It was Ross's girlfriend to...
Oh, right. To Andy Yinging. It was, yes. Yeah. Lena and Yinging. Yeah. okay. Another quote. Oh, all of us like stairs, going up, going down, always going the same way. That got me a little bit because I was like, oh, that's a very interesting, because they did repeat the same things that their mothers had done. Yeah. And then,
yeah,
it's all cyclical, but still.
I mean, I can't remember. You keep good track of it. I was actually, as I was watching it, I was like, should I be taking notes about all of this stuff? But I kind of like the idea of it just happening.
Yeah. I felt like it was a movie that you can watch at different times in your life and kind of actually have it effect change mm-hmm. in your life. Like, I don't know. I just felt like it's one of those movies that as you grow, you're going to understand it even more.
Yeah.
Like now I totally, like when I was a kid, it was the kids. And now mm-hmm. I'm relating to the women and their partners and the in America, in San Francisco. And then I'm sure like,
I mean, definitely when I saw it, which was, you know, that was what, early 90s? Like, I wouldn't have... I mean, I think I was just watching it as, like, an Asian kid with a mom.
Yeah.
You know? Like, that was, like, on a purely visceral level, I understood what it was about. And then watching it this time, I was like, oh, my God. Like, I didn't remember any of the... I actually, in my mind, remembered only the two generations. I didn't really remember the full flashbacks to that past.
Yeah.
And I think it was way over my head, all the... You know, the oppression and the sexuality and all of that stuff. And
the watermelon.
The watermelon. Oh, my God, the watermelon. So forced erotic.
Yeah.
So gross. watching it again, also just being able to see it from an adult perspective.
Yeah.
And not just because of the adult watermelon content.
But. Well, and it was... It stuck in my mind when I was younger because it was so, it seemed so, I hate this word, but salacious and so not controversial, but just these stories that you're like, oh my, that really happened. Or, I mean, it really happened, but it was part of the...
Is the reason why it's in the criteria not, like, is your criteria... Like, when I watched that movie at the time, I thought it was high art.
Mm-hmm, same.
I was like, and this watching is it this the time. Most, yeah, this is like, I'm watching films now. I don't know if you know, but I'm like a mature teenaged woman who watches films, like the Joy Luck Club. Like, and is that what makes like a criteria or not?
It's like, it's really subjective and it's just what's in my heart.
Right.
And it's just the movies that I connect with, often female centric,
with or without Meryl Streep,
usually comedies, usually things that are quote unquote fluffy, or like, you know, we were talking about doing Romy and Michelle's, which I'm going to do, I promise, a lot of requests for that. And it's just stuff that I love and has affected me, even though it's not an art film, quote unquote.
That,
because watching it this time, I was like, this is Oprah. This is like,
it's like that film versus movie kind of, like, it's like such a stupid line to draw, but it really, did it entertain you? Did it connect you with you? Like,
it's like music for me too. I like context. It has a lot to do with context.
Yeah.
How I enjoy a movie. And like, you know, growing up in a smaller town in Ontario and being having Clueless and Drop Dead Gorgeous be these windows into
other this, like other world where other like
things. Yeah, yeah, not to be, oh my god, I'm starting to sound like the head of the Academy of Motion Pictures getting up at the Oscars and saying a boring speech about how film changes our lives, but that's really what it is. It's not, it's just things that I think would be looked down upon sometimes by
right.
film
yeah
aficionados or like film buffs. That's right. The horrible word that I'm right. looking for. When in reality it takes a lot to make a movie this good, even though it's not,
yeah,
you know,
and quote, it takes unquote, a perfect. It takes a lot to make a movie this good, and it also doesn't take much to make a movie this good. You know what I mean? Like all that technique, all that style, all the stuff, all the criteria mm-hmm. that they mm-hmm. would be looking for isn't necessarily all stuff that you need to check off a list to tell a good story.
Yeah, I think it's like it excites me emotionally, and whereas Criterion movies excite you technically and mm-hmm. as maybe a filmmaker, right. I don't know. Yeah, I just think like it's there's still a lot of artistry mm-hmm. in movies that aren't bequeathed into this.
Yeah. Well, and I think society. Like I remember there was that, and I don't usually participate in those like kind of those Instagram chain kind of tag your favorite 10 movies with it. Remember that one? There was like your top 10 movies, just screen grab, say nothing. And I ate that shit up.
Yeah.
Like I was doing like, I did like 10 yeah. frames per 10 days, like yeah. fully cheated. But it was also just being able to see a still image from a film that may or may not be, you know, critically celebrated, but it's still like a great frame.
Yeah.
And actually one of those frames I remember was from Joylet Club. It was like that shot looking over the stairwell when they're coming up the stairs. I just grabbed
that last night. Yeah.
Like that's a beautiful shot.
Yeah. And that's another thing that started because this, as you all know, started as a visual thing that I was just like, in my spare time, I'd watch a movie and do that, grab frames from, because I saw a post about The Princess Diaries on mm-hmm. Tumblr, and I've reblogged it at criterionaut.tumblr.com. And it's just the frames that are actually really cool, and you might think that they were an art house movie if you didn't know the context yeah. of Princess Diaries, and going through movies like this, like, I mean, the also we didn't talk about the colors in the movie and how yeah. much white, red, gold, yeah. blue, all of the symbols and the mythology of Chinese culture, which you know, you talked a little bit about, like that, I don't know, and the superstition mm-hmm. and just like taking that for fact and that being a part of their lives. Where, you know, it's like I've cursed you with, I didn't have a soul, you don't right. have a soul because I killed yeah. the baby
yeah.
and I'm putting all my hopes on you and all of that stuff. Is that present in your life at all, or is that,
I mean, I do like I did really appreciate the fact that, you know, there was this, again, I kept connecting it to Crazy Rich Asians. There was so much put on this like Asianness of that and celebrating it, and you know, it's, by all means, it's like it's a historical moment in film, blah blah blah. But what I loved about the Joylet Club is like all that stuff, the like superstitions, the like the feng shui, all that kind of stuff.
Yeah, the mirror
was not where like yeah. was not fetishized in this like we're about to make some like Asian references for you know, it was just like part of their life.
Yeah,
which is what it is.
Yeah,
for anybody who grows up like that, and it doesn't dumb it down for the white audience who would have and who will see this movie. It's yeah. like it's a story within a culture, but it's also like just about mothers and daughters and women. You know, and that's why you can connect with it, whether you understand, even like, hey, I'm sure there's a bunch of stuff that you wouldn't necessarily even connect with or even understand, which I remember there being like with Crazy Rich Asians, there was the whole conversation about the Mahjong game.
Yes.
And like, you don't necessarily need to know Mahjong. And like, if you did, you got that much more scene out of that one tile that she plays. But if you don't know how it, you know, but if you do know, you're also like, oh, that's smart. But it's the same kind of thing where it's like, you don't need to know any of that.
Yeah.
But it's, and it, the way that it's written and the way that it's presented is like not a about those traditions. It's just like part of their life.
That those traditions are a part of their lives that you don't have to, it's mm-hmm. not a gag almost yeah. sometimes the way it's treated or like yeah. in.
And for something that, for a movie like that, that was so, Joy Luck Club, that was so kind of manipulative in certain ways with the music and you're going to cry, you'd almost, in the wrong hands, and maybe this is to Wayne Wang's credit, like, he didn't make a big deal of any of those scenes and wasn't trying to point out and be like, look, this is what Chinese people do.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
This is just...
It was specific and universal.
Yeah.
Like, wow, that's shitty. I'm going to cut that out. Still loser. Oh, God. Well, where can people find you so that they can follow you now that they know you? If they didn't already.
You can follow me on Instagram, Twitter, and WhatsApp. No.
You just give your phone number. Text me.
You can find all of my information on alishayoung.com. A-L-E-Y-S-A. Young, Y-O-U-N-G.com. And I'm on Instagram and all those things.
Everyone always calls you Alisa.
Alisa.
Or the story is Alisha with an H added in there, but it's A-L-E-Y-S-A-Y-O-U-N-G.
It's supposed to be Alisa. I couldn't say that when I was little. I kept calling myself Shasha.
Oh,
and so Shasha. That's how it became Alisha.
You called yourself Thank You?
Yeah. May May.
May May. Well, follow Alisha on her Twitter and Instagram. She posts beautiful pictures and funny things and all of her projects that are coming up. Watch Working Moms, watch Baroness, watch New Eden coming out on January 1st, 2020. Okay. Boon for the new year. Impeach and Trump. Ginny and Georgia. When's Ginny and Georgia coming out?
Ginny and Georgia, summer 2020.
Okay.
And hopefully by this time.
Now we'll you have some more scripts, so you're going to have some more coming after yeah, that.
And then every other thing that I do after that.
Yep. Follow Criterionaut on the socials if you want to. I post screen grabs from the films on Instagram at Criterionaut. If we'd like to be a patron, go on over to patreon.com/Criterionaut. I'll post some more juicy stuff from today's chat behind the paywall. When you join, you get access to all the bonus content that's already been posted. And thank you to all my patrons already. Oh my
Make
God.
Make sure I'm to like, all, subscribe, and donate.
Like, oh yeah. Seriously, writing a little review really is really, really helpful. Helps keep Criterionaut charting out of the 700,000 podcasts. That's not a joke. There are 700,000 podcasts in the world. So I'm very happy with being able to show up on the charts.
How are there 700,000 podcasts and this is the first time I've podded?
Yeah. that's the wild thing. There's a huge audience of people who still haven't listened to podcasts yet, so there's room for all of us.
And if you're one of those people,
yeah,
welcome to your first podcast.
Yes, thank you for listening. All right, love you, bye. Thank you, Alisha.
Thank you.
Well, that wraps it up for season one of the Criterionaut podcast. Thanks for listening so far. I am going to take a little hiatus because when I started this thing, I didn't know that I'd be moving back to Canada. And, you know, I need to reacquaint myself with being in Toronto and reconnect with a lot of things and people before I keep doing this. I had a great little visit with family over the holidays. I hope you all did too. I have seen nobody in the city except for Alisha, today's guest, and people I run into at the gym or people from high school when I was up north. Anyway, fascinating. We recorded that just before the Christmas holidays, so Alisha's show that she directed called New Eden is actually out on Crave right now. There are 8 episodes. It's very rich, and you can, you know, do that binge thing. Thank you so much for your support so far. I can't wait to keep bringing you more. And I'll see ya around. There's a bonus episode coming for the patrons on Monday. It's pretty juicy a little bit, kind of. Maybe there should be some surprises in there for you, hopefully. All right. Am I delusional? Am I a delusional narcissist? Oh, God. Bye.